Every day there is a forgetting, and every moment there is the possibility of remembering. Remembering who you truly are, awakening to your body, to the inner world and experience of being alive. Here is where you find the beauty, the joy. Here is where you free your soma. Hello everyone, I'm Amy Takaya and I have an exciting announcement. At the end of September, I will be hosting my first full-length retreat. Somatic Awakening will take place in the San Gabriel Mountains. This three-day transformational experience will include Hana Somatic Movement, hands-on somatic bodywork by my father William Davis, my cousin Seiji Oshenza, and myself. We will also explore somatic yoga and mudra practice, as well as an end-of-the-day sound healing to deepen your calm and release. Only 9 spaces are available for full-time participants. Day passes will be available for the Saturday activities. Right now, you can get $200 off the full price of the retreat. So, if you're feeling called into freedom and ease of movement, a peaceful, relaxed nervous system, delicious plant-based meals, and a fresh and enlivened way of being, go to freeyoursoma.com and hold your space. Payment plans are available by request, and feel free to reach out to me with questions or comments at freeyoursoma@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening and supporting this self-healing revolution. Hello, and welcome to Free Your Soma, Stories of Somatic Awakening and How to Live from the Inside Out. Today, I have board-certified hypnotherapist Grant Offenberger with me. Is that how I say your name correctly? I forgot to ask that.
That's correct.
Good. And we're going to explore some really interesting, fun subjects today around mind-body connection. Grant is a not just a hypnotherapist, but he also describes himself as a mental personal trainer who works with people who are looking to strengthen their mind. Awesome. That sounds really exciting. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who feel like, you know, their mind sort of like runs them instead of them running their mind, right? Instead of them using their mind as a tool, there might be a lot of people out there that are plagued with anxiety or anxious thoughts, or, you know, feel like their mind is not necessarily like on their team sometimes. So I can imagine that would be really, really helpful for people. Yeah. Would you say a little bit about yourself, about your background? Tell us about your work a bit.
Yeah, definitely. So hypnosis has been something that's interested me for a very long time. I've always been interested in influential figures in all sorts of different fields, from infomercials to politics, you name it. As a child, this fascinated me. And then I became interested in cults, why they work and how people use them. Some cults, yeah, they're good. They're good cults, but others are a little more menacing, and how they can use that to manipulate people's minds and their actions, where they feel like it's their own free will, but they're following someone else's rules, someone else's controlling. And so one day I just happened to stumble upon Tony Robbins' video on Netflix. I wanted to see, what's this guy about? Is he a cult? I saw what he was doing and I thought it was really fascinating. I had no idea what he was doing. And so I looked it up. It was neuro-linguistic programming, almost a sister practice to hypnosis, interwoven very well. And so I started learning neuro-linguistic programming, started learning hypnosis because it was just so fascinating. I was learning it simply as a passion, as an interest, as curiosity, not thinking, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make a lot of money on it. I didn't think I was going to see a single person. I just wanted to know this stuff for the curiosity of it. And so other people wouldn't manipulate me. If you know what to do, then you know when other people are doing it on you. Mm. And as I got better at it, I started to take actual classes. It wasn't just going at my own pace, learning books and videos. I was taking classes. I became internationally board certified in hypnosis through the ICBCH. I started to see clients, and I didn't think that I would be that good because I guess I just wasn't confident enough in it. So I started off with pay what it's worth to you, because I didn't want to rip people off. And they were paying me good money and they were telling me how great their lives were becoming. So I realized this was something I needed to kind of pursue as an entire profession because I'm loving it and other people are benefiting from it. Like it would be selfish and rude not to. And so I've just been going forward full speed with that and just seeing clients and getting my hands into things that I don't quite know if I'm comfortable with. And usually it's the ones where I'm not totally confident in it that we have the most profound results.
Yeah, so you bring in a lot of, sounds like some creativity and some intuitive energy where you're like, I'm not sure how this is going to turn out, but I'm just going to be present and follow the cues and the things that are in front of me and just do my best and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can learn every kind of technique, everything from a book, but the most important thing is simply knowing how to do it, knowing what to do, and caring about the people. If you care about the people, you're going to work really hard to make sure that they're getting the care they need.
Excellent. Yes, I totally agree. That sounds like a very interesting journey with this. So, I noticed you also are doing more public speaking and you're doing more events to share about how hypnotherapy relates to other areas of our lives. You have an event coming up, I think, down in San Diego that looks really interesting about storytelling. Would you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, so at a little convention, the San Diego Comic-Con International, I have a panel there, and it's going to be Friday the 21st at 6 p.m., room 11. It's going to be me moderating it, and then I have all sorts of different storytellers, WWE superstar wrestlers, I have best-selling authors, I have a co-founder of the band Gwar. I have the creator of the Apple television show, Silo, Hugh Howey. So I'm going to have a very diverse group of people in the panel. And that was the goal because I'm going to start off the panel discussing a few key points of how hypnosis works in storytelling and various aspects of that. And then I'll ask each person to describe how they tell a compelling story, what they do to hook in an audience after they've had their turns. I'll tie it all in. I'll show them and I'll show the audience how each of those things are rooted in hypnosis because the things that work, work because you're putting the audience in a trance. And that'll show them how, if they're writing a story themselves, how to use these techniques to write a really dynamic, compelling story. Or if they're not even writing a story per se, how they can use these to write the story of their life, how they can use these to see how other people are manipulating them and how to break those chains. And how to write their own story to create the life that truly serves them.
Wow, that sounds quite deep and interesting. And I giggled when you mentioned, Gwar, because it's funny, for whatever reason, this is the second time that Gwar has been mentioned on this podcast. And it's probably like, I don't know, I think last time it was me who brought it up, so I just think that's really funny since they don't necessarily have anything to do with like somatics or free your soma, but now I've had, two episodes including this featuring a little like cameo from Gwar.
They have to make the song for your podcast
Right on. Yes. And they definitely know how to tell like a story in their
now.
performances. If anybody's familiar, they do a lot of performance, like at their shows and costumes and accessories and shooting things into the crowd. And it's certainly like a narrative that is woven around like the mystical, otherworldliness of Gwar and all their, insanity. So yeah, I love that you're playing with this and you're really like, relating what you've learned to like other areas of life. And I think that that is a creative process. And that's something that like not everybody is tuned into. Sometimes we get very compartmentalized in like our modality and we don't really see how it connects to and relates to like these other areas of life. But you're doing that so beautifully, especially with this concept around storytelling. And the other piece that I wanted to bring in here was this idea of being able to recognize the tools that are being used to manipulate us. And in understanding them, we can actually like stop being manipulated or at least like interrupt that process to some degree, and we can start creating our own narrative. And I think that that to me is a really, to me, that is like a part of like this paradigm shift from being in systems of control versus being independent and being in control of ourselves and in control of our own bodies and our own lives. So I think that's like a really important piece. And I love that you bring that in. You know, as a hypnotherapist, you have a lot of responsibility because there is this, you know, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, in a moment, but like the way that people are vulnerable while they're working with you, they're putting themselves not only in this vulnerable position of like coming to see you to get some kind of help, but on top of that, you're helping to put them into a trance where they become even more susceptible. And so, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that you're taking on, but it sounds like you're also inviting them to take responsibility for their own lives and for themselves versus just always being dependent on the hypnotherapist or dependent on somebody else to manipulate or to control their body and their mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're not aware of what's going on around you, so much can happen to you. If you don't see the cage around you, you won't know you're caged up. And so, one goal of mine in all of this is to show you the cage and show you there's an easy door right there. All you have to do is step out and you can go anywhere you want. And that's part of why I consider myself a mental personal trainer, because a lot of times you'll see these teachers, these gurus, these practitioners. They almost get an ego trip as if they're here to heal you and they're the ones that are special. When the truth is, everyone's fairly the same. I just happen to learn some processes that'll make it easier for you. So I'm here to show you how to help yourself. Now, just like a physical personal trainer, you can work out anywhere. I could lift the desk right in front of me and I can do some push-ups right here. I'm not going to because I don't have the motivation and I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't know which muscles to activate in my body. But if I go to a personal trainer, they can show me how to act accurately exercise, how to not injure myself, and how to do things in the most performance-based ideas. And so that's how I consider myself. You can do all this stuff, but you might not know how to do it accurately. So if you come to me, I'll show you exactly how to do it. And then you can even do it at home. You're no longer reliant on me.
Beautiful. And that's so the same way actually that I work with the somatic work that I do. I'm teaching people how to do this for themselves. Like you said, like there's not a huge difference, like, you know, in some ways between me, you, and my clients. We're all capable and intelligent and like self, at the end of the day, self-led humans. We're feeling into what's happening around us in the world, and we're negotiating with our inner experience, and we're moving ahead and moving forward with our own volition, right? The difference is that we each get different tools and we have different life experiences, and those things, you know, color like how we do something, you know, or how we're showing up. And so someone comes to someone like you or me, they're not getting fixed. They're just gaining more tools and they're maybe getting to see a different perspective. And I love that piece about helping them help themselves, because it's so empowering, and people need that. People need to be like, kind of, if they've been living in this state of disempowerment, they need to like remember how powerful they are. They need someone to support them in feeling that and experiencing that again, so that they can have a glorious, victorious life. Yeah.
That's beautiful. As long as you give someone the encouragement and you know how to properly motivate them, people are capable of amazing things.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and we had talked a little bit about this on our like pre-interview, but you were mentioning that there are different ways in which the hypnotherapy work that you do impacts people's physiology. Like when we talk about mind, our mind isn't separate from our body. It's our nervous system. It's, you know, part of our literal physical tissue in our body. Would you say a little bit about the way that you kind of incorporate body and movement into what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Every part of the body is connected to the mind and vice versa. It's all one thing. We like to separate different things, but they're all connected. Even the movement of your eyeballs will simply change your state. The movement of your body, the movement of your breath, each individual thing can simply change your state of mind because happiness is a state. You can create that anytime. And you can create states even more fulfillingly with the body, with how you move the body. So even through day-to-day processes, when I'm not being Grant the hypnotherapist, I'll have people be like, "Oh, I'm so tired. I'd be like, well, how do you expect to feel any energy standing like that? And they'll stand up, and a few minutes later, they're feeling better. Your posture is so connected to your feeling, your state of being, who you identify as a tired person, an alert person. There's all sorts of different things and techniques. Like when I do these speaking events and these pop-up events, I like to bring one game with me. It's called the NLP Alphabet Game. So it's a board with the alphabet on it, and underneath each letter is an L, R, or T. L for left, R for right, and T for together. So as you read the alphabet, you're using the corresponding letters to lift the left hand or the right hand or both and snap the fingers. And as you're doing that, once you get to the end and you start back again, you use the opposite leg. So if it's the left hand, it's the right leg, and vice versa. You're crossing the hemisphere with your physical body. You're visually looking at the alphabet, auditorily hearing yourself speak it and snapping in each ear. And you're kinesthetically moving. You're engaging so many different aspects of the body and of the mind all together that you can simply just break any cycle. I like to use it for when people are experiencing negative thought cycles, insecurities, things that upset them, and they just can't get over it. This engages so much of your mind and body that you can simply just essentially click the restart button on your mind, and you can start to have new goals. Where do you want the rest of your day to go? And there's all sorts of different techniques with the physical body because it's all connected. You can do this with excellence. You're in a state that you don't want to be in. So imagine someone who's where you want to be. Look at them in front of you. How are they breathing? How are they standing? What's their posture like? Everything about them physically. And then step into that circle around them and become them. Breathe as they breathe, stand as they stand, keep their posture, take on their physiology, and notice what's different. How do you feel now? More often than not, almost every single time, they feel the way they wished they would feel before. They now have taken on those feelings because they took on that physiology. It's all connected. It's all one thing. And it's simply just knowing these little tips and tricks that'll help them get there, that'll motivate them to get there, because people are motivated through pain and pleasure. And it's all about learning how to motivate them with which one at what time.
Yes, those the modeling, the idea of kind of looking at what it is that you want to be. I think that this goes way back to like when we're children, we often will be modeling ourselves after our siblings or after our parents or after like the older children or adults in our lives, and we'll physically model like the way that we stand, the way that we move our faces, and it's these mirror neurons in our brain that like copy what we see. But what you just described takes it kind of to the next level because yeah, it's one thing to like look at something outside of yourself and say, I want that. And it's another thing to actually create it in your mind and visualize it. When we visualize it, a different thing happens in our brain. Something called a motor plan is created. And it's different than using mirror neurons to execute a task or to do something with our bodies. When you start actually bringing in visualization internally, your body starts creating like literally like a plan of what muscles are going to be activated to do that activity or to do that thing, and your nervous system gets shifted pretty dramatically. You start having like an expectation of what that experience will be like, and your body actually starts creating it before it's even happened. So what you're describing, with, visualizing this model of what we'd like to experience or what we'd like to be, it is literally, I mean, from a nervous system perspective, it's literally happening. You're literally creating that in your body. And so even if, you're not like the, millionaire or whatever yet, or you're not up on stage, like giving this grand performance or something, you are priming your literal system to be able to do that, to be able to physically show up that way. So I love what you just said. I think that's a really awesome tool to invite people in. And you're doing this during a hypnotherapy session, I'm taking it, right?
Oh, yes. The standard hypnosis induction, post-hypnotic suggestions are typically in a session for sure, but we're incorporating so many various things that are almost sisters to hypnosis, hypnotherapy. whatever I feel the client needs. It doesn't have to be strictly induction and suggestion. We're doing a lot more than that.
Nice. And the way that this shifts things for people, can you tell us a little bit about like what are some of the results that people like experience, whether it's the same day or people maybe that you've worked with for a period of time, like what kind of like literal stuff starts to shift and shift in their bodies or in their lives?
Yeah, this has helped with a lot of various things, a lot from confidence. So I'd say most of it stems from fear because confidence stems from fear and they're gaining new confidence. They're excelling at these interviews. We'll do whole courses on how to nail your interview. We'll do this for people that are struggling with addiction. They have dependencies. Well, it's not necessarily the chemical that they're after. They're looking for a way out of what they have. And so we'll use this to show them a new way to get out of what they have. Here's a new road to take. And as long as you make it engaging and interesting enough, they'll latch on to that new story for themselves. Fear of flying, we've done this for. They see themselves as a confident flyer and they become a confident flyer, which really helps for these clients I get that are constantly on the plane. They're flying weekly and they're suffering every week thinking they're going to die. And now they can simply just enjoy it for what it is. It has great effects. These simple little techniques can do profound results.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think I've known a couple of people who've tried and done hypnotherapy for like quitting smoking. And again, like you said, it's more complex than just needing the nicotine, right? It's like that we're looking for a sense of safety, well-being, maybe it's joy, maybe it's fulfillment. And those are the things that can be often at the root cause of addiction, is a lack of these experiences, these states of being that at one point in our lives, maybe we lost or never really experienced fully, right? Because of different things in our lives that happen. So that's really beautiful. I love that there's a lot of different applications to this work. Can you say a little bit more about this idea of being like a mental personal trainer? How does that show up for you in your world? Like, do you do this stuff to yourself, or do you need like a hypnotherapist for the hypnotherapist?
I personally do it for myself. Maybe sometimes I might benefit from my own hypnotherapist, but when I catch myself slipping in ways that I don't want to be, I'll do these techniques on myself. There's certain ways to manipulate it and change these processes where you can do it for yourself, because oftentimes, how are you supposed to be the hypnotist, the client, and the observer? So you have to alter it a little bit. And that's kind of the things that I also show my clients as homework. I give them these same techniques, but altered so they can do it for themselves. And I'll do that for myself as well. It's all just exercising these different parts of your mind because you go throughout your day, every day, doing the same thing, going to work, going home, eating dinner, watching TV, going to sleep, doing the same thing. Your mind gets stale. It has no stimulation any other way. Just like if you didn't move your body at all, it would atrophy. And so you don't want your psyche to atrophy. So it's important to exercise it regularly. And that doesn't mean hard work. You can simply take your mind on a little walk, imagine different things. Certain metaphor work helps a lot. Stories change lives. It activates all these different parts of the mind because the mind doesn't know the difference between fantasy and reality most of the time. In fact, they've done studies where athletes imagine practicing and they do nearly as well as the ones that actually practice, and so much better than the ones that didn't do anything. Your mind is so strong. Watching movies, the media you consume programs your mind. And so it's fun to watch media that might not be good for your mind, but as long as you know what it's doing and you know how to counteract it, you know, okay, this is influencing me, so I should do this. I think it's important to ask yourself three questions. I always ask myself with everything. This has really reshaped my life, is whose thoughts are you thinking? Where did they come from? And are they serving you? And simply just asking yourself those three questions with everything in your life will really shine a light on whether these are psychic infections, whether these are other people's ideas placed upon you for their own gain, or simply because they don't know what they're doing and they told you bad advice, Or maybe these things really did help you out and you should continue them. And those three questions will really give you insight on yourself and your life.
Yes, that's really profound, because I think it was, you know, long time ago now, when I was in my early 20s, like I was with a therapist and we were working through different beliefs that I had that were like my mother's, you know, like, or my father's, or beliefs that I had gotten from my parents. And I like was instructed to literally like write them down. And it was this huge breakthrough for me, because I realized I had been thinking other people's thoughts, you know, and I had been believing that they were truth and that they were somehow like, you know, these things that were based on my parents' life experiences, you know, that they just said to me one time and I absorbed it, you know, so deeply, and then like made it my reality, like, oh no. And it wasn't serving me, right? It wasn't, it was, in, you know. And it's funny, because when I would actually go and like at one point I like said to my, told my dad, like, oh, you said this thing to me, you know, and I was upset about it, and that's, it impacted me like this. He had no memory of saying it. It was just like something he said one time, you know. And if you think about all the things we say, you know, but our children are listening, and, you know, people are listening to us, and you never know like what you're going to say and how it's going to impact somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. But kind of going back to this idea of, you know, altered brain states and kind of the experience that people are in a hypnotherapy session is not too different than actually how it is to be like a child. Because children are in a totally different brainwave state than you are as an adult. Would you say a little bit about the different kinds of brainwaves? And for anybody who's listening who maybe isn't familiar?
Yeah, I'm actually glad you mentioned it's like being a child, because that is so right on. That is it. People sometimes are scared. Oh, okay, hypnosis, like you lose a sense of control. And that's not it. My goal is to bring you more at a childlike state of mind, you know, be more open, more free. When you look at children, they can easily say no if they don't want to do something. But if you ask them to imagine certain things, to play along with certain things, they'll easily, happily do it. If you look at a child, they experience trauma, they experience pain, and they'll show it. They'll cry, they'll scream, they'll whatnot. And 30 seconds later, they're off doing the next thing. They're not holding on to it. They experience it fully, let it go, and then experience what's next to come. And so that's the goal here, is to take you to different states where you can experience these emotions. We'll have ab reactions. I'll definitely make sure I have tissues on hand, because some people need it. Some people have been holding back these emotions because they don't want to feel them, because it's not convenient, because they think it makes them weak, whatever their reasoning is, and they have to release it before they can make any progress. So they'll be screaming and crying, and it's not necessarily painful for them. It's more like a child. A child screams and cries, and then they're good. And so they release all of this, and they're good, and we can continue. We can take them to various states, because you can create whatever state you'd like. I could say one thing and you could create the state to be happy, to be humored, to be sad and depressed. Simple things. It's all a matter of brain waves, of mind states, and how you get there. And a lot of it has to do with your hierarchy of beliefs, with your values and criteria, how you view the world, because we all have different viewpoints of the world. I have one map of reality and you have another map, but there's one full territory of reality that may be completely different than the two ways that we view it. And so it's all about getting people in different mindsets, different states, and being able to accept and understand different viewpoints, to truly acknowledge that what they were feeling, what they were telling themselves, doesn't have to be what they feel and what they tell themselves now.
Right. And it's a shift of perception and perspective. So they are, they're getting an opportunity, like you said before, to kind of rewrite or reprogram the way that things have been going. And yeah, it's like you've mentioned, bringing us back into that state of being more like we were when we were children, where we're really adaptable, right? Where yes, maybe we are more like susceptible and vulnerable, but that may be a good thing if we can direct that. You know, if a child is receiving a lot of, you know, positive kinds of education, or is in a loving and nurturing environment,
It's wonderful for the child to be able to like deeply absorb that, right? And that's the nature of our consciousness at that time in our lives. And it's wonderful to realize, in what you're saying, that we can actually return to that, during these times, that we can create that susceptibility again for our own betterment. Doesn't have to be something that we accidentally fall into because there's some charismatic leader who, is manipulating us. We can choose to go into that state for our own benefit, right? That's really awesome.
Great, great. I'm glad you got something out of that.
Yes. Yeah, so you've talked a little bit about some of the tools that you use. Would you kind of like give us like a, how would you say, like almost like a sample session? Like what would be the first questions? Like, does someone ever come to you and they're like, I don't know why I'm here? Or do they come in with like a filled out a form already and they know why they're there and they're there to work on something specific?
They'll usually call or email, and I'll ask them just a little tiny bit why you feel you need this, because I don't want to see someone and this is not what they need. They need open heart surgery, you know. So I make sure that it's something that I'm qualified to help for. And then once they get in, then almost half the session is asking questions because I need to figure out their criteria and values. Everyone has different values. And even the people with the same values, it might look completely different because they have different criteria of what that value is. You might have a value of respect, and I might have a value of respect, but you might think I'm disrespectful because your criteria of respect is that someone needs to be completely honest, blunt, upfront all the time. And my criteria of respect is that I need to protect your feelings and harbor them and make sure that you're okay. So I might bend the truth a little bit to make sure that you are still happy. So we both value respect, but we have different criteria for it. So I'm asking a good amount of questions to figure out their criteria and values, to figure out what their issue is, but less so what the issue is and more of what they want. We'll attach what they want to their criteria and values, what they value, what they respect, what they want out of life. We'll create a game plan from that. And then we need to figure out how are we going to motivate them to go after it? Because sitting in the chair, going into trance, doing some metaphors, that's real cool. But what, an hour, 2 hours tops? And what else are you going to do for the rest of your life? It's not miracle work. I'm here to show you how to take control of yourself. So we play with the motivation. And there's two ways to motivate people, either to go away from pain or to go towards pleasure. I mean, there's only two ways to motivate the racehorse, the whip from behind or the carrot dangling in front is the metaphor they like to use. And so we go from your criteria and values. We create a complete picture of what you're looking for, what you want, what you desire, and make sure it lines up. There's congruency between your values and what you want. And then we create a game plan. So, like for me, for myself, the past few weeks, I've lost 12 pounds because I harnessed motivation through pain and pleasure. I realized I was snacking a lot because it created instant pleasure. Oh, this tastes good. There's some pleasure. Oh, more pleasure. And it added more and more calories, and I was gaining weight. So, I harnessed pain to lose weight. I got a calorie tracking app. So, okay, I have 2,000 calories for the day. I better be more mindful of what I'm eating because I don't want to lose those calories. Because studies show you feel more pain losing money than you feel pleasure gaining money. So, I took it in that same route. I have $2,000 calories, and each thing I eat lowers that. So, I need to be mindful. I'm getting the most nutrition out of the calories, I'm getting the most value out of my money. And because I went from it being going towards pleasure, getting this little treat, this little snack, to avoiding pain, don't eat that, that's going to remove calories and not give you sustenance. I was able to lose 12 pounds in just a few weeks and it keeps going. And I apply that same principle to all my clients. What are some things that will create pleasure? What are some things that will create pain? Avoid the pain, go towards the pleasure in a way that will get you your goals that is congruent with your values. And so almost the first half of the session is asking all these questions because most people come in saying, well, I don't want this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want this. Well, I mean, It's good to know what you don't want, but it's not going to get you anywhere. If you don't want to smoke, well, you can do heroin instead. Like, there's a million different things you can do that aren't smoking, but they're not going to get you your goals that line up with your values. So it is a struggle to get people into a positive state of mind. What do you want? If you're not feeling sad, how will you be feeling? Oh, you'll be feeling happy. Well, what does happiness even look to you? Because everyone has a different sense of happiness. And it's deconstructing their entire reality into a blueprint and rebuilding it from there.
Awesome. Thank you for breaking that down. That's awesome. That's just incredible. I'm like thinking about, you know, when you talked about the values and then the criteria, it's a really important distinction. Cause like you said, like a concept is a concept, but it can mean so many different things to a person, you know, not just, you know, because of their individual mindset, but maybe because of their culture, right? Or because of like their situation in life. Right? A lot of these things are very unique and individual. So it sounds wonderful that you take the time to actually check in with that. And, you know, what I also loved about the way that you describe this is that you didn't put a lot of like judgment on how it should be. There wasn't like a criteria that you're looking them to fit into. You're sort of looking for what is there without a lot of like, yeah, without a lot of like judgment about what it should look like. Instead, you give it, you know, freedom to be however it is. And I think just that alone, for someone to be seen in that way, you know, by someone who's there to help them, is so therapeutic. Because a lot of times people, you know, especially if you're, you know, I guess I'm guessing you're like in your 30s, like me, if you're raised in like the 80s and 90s or something, you know, there was kind of this model of like, how do we fit you into this structure? How do we fit you into this ideal versus how are you and what do you need? Right. And less of it being individualized and more of it being kind of like, how do we fit you into this structure? So I thought that was incredible. I think that's incredibly therapeutic and helpful for people to arrive into a space where someone's determining what they need based on what they have going on, not on what they should have. Right. At any given moment. That's really wonderful. And furthermore, like the idea of orienting to, okay, you know what you don't want. And I mean, I've been down this road so many times because I often will be like, oh, I know what I don't like, especially let's say in the relationship with my husband or something. Oh, I don't like that you're doing this. And I don't like that you're doing that. But like, what do I like? Like, what do I want more of? What is there that's happening that is actually positive? Because there's always something positive happening, you know, even if you look in like the case of like someone getting into a car accident, which seems like a really terrible inconvenience, you know, throws your whole day off, right? But there's always some kind of positive piece there, you know, even if it was a deadly car accident, you know, there's still that it didn't kill more people, you know what I mean, than the amount of people it killed. Like there's always a way to kind of reframe and realize that like there's always something going on there that is positive. And the reframe and like reorienting to what we want to move towards is so beneficial because people will often not know that. And that's like you said, you can't move forward if you don't know where you're going, if you don't know where you want to go. You might know where you don't want to be, but you know, if you don't know where you want to be. And so it sounds like there's a fair amount of invitation during these sessions for people to get into an exploratory state where maybe they weren't sure, but then things start arriving in their mind's eye. They start imagining, they start getting in touch with what they really desire. And I think that sounds really incredible too. That sounds really beautiful because it's a creative process.
Yeah, it can be fun. It's even fun during the process when you see they have this epiphany and they have a certain look on them. And they're like, I never thought of it that way, but I never brought any ideas towards them. I'm only there asking questions. They created this new mindset, this new reframe, and it really, you can see it on their face that it changed the way they view it all, and it really helped them. Simply me asking them questions about their own thoughts. And they do feel that comfort of no judgment. There's no narrative. I'm not trying to fit them in anything because my whole goal is to give them exactly what they want. So I can't possibly have a narrative. And I like to view it in a certain way So there is no judgment. I view them essentially as they're completely perfect. They are absolute pure essence of perfection. They are basically God sitting on a chair next to me, and they're playing a character of someone suffering. And so I hear out their story that they've spent this whole time creating of how they're a suffering person. But deep down, I know that they're perfection underneath that. And so my goal is through different techniques is to show them and to write them a better story, a more entertaining story, something that makes them happy, that serves them, that gives them purpose. And it's more entertaining than suffering. So they'll go with my story and they'll live their lives based off of the story I presented them, because they're getting bored of their story. They're getting bored of suffering and they're looking for something more. And so my whole goal is I need to find a better story for them. So there is no judgment. If they have this strangely terrible life, I'm not going to judge them. I'm going to be completely fascinated that that's the life that was created. I'm going to be completely intrigued by their story rather than judging them. And they can feel, you can feel when you're being judged, and they can feel that there is no judgment there. And even those questions, like you were saying, how sometimes it's hard to know what you want, but you know what you don't want. And you said that that happens with your relationship from times. That happens a lot. That happened to me. That happens to everyone, of course. We're all pretty much the same. But these techniques, these teachings really help. Like with my marriage, it's better than ever. It's more deeper, more fulfilling. No arguments, which you would think would be boring at times, but it's not. As perfect as it's ever been, more perfect than ever, simply by applying this to my own life. If you apply these to different aspects of your life, not just the one issue you came in for, but all around your life, you'll notice all these little changes that just make everything so much better.
Awesome. Yes. Yes. And it sounds like you are living it. And, you know, what you said before, I love this inquiry, you know, asking questions, and then with the space of no judgment, the words that you used were that you're fascinated and intrigued if they're having this horrible experience in life, if they're having this dreadful life, so to speak, right? I think that is delightful because it's different than immediately showing someone compassion. Because I think that sometimes when people are having a really hard time, like they're certainly going to be the type of person that wants your sympathy, that wants your compassion, that wants you to kind of like feel sorry for them, you know, whatever they call it, like a pity party or something, right? And then there's going to be people who really don't like that. But to show up just curious and inquisitive and intrigued by the experience they're having is it's a different energy than immediately showing someone compassion for their hardship. I think it's in many ways a bit more light. It's less loaded for some people. Some people aren't ready to receive compassion, as crazy as that sounds. They're just not, but they're ready for people to be curious and intrigued. They're ready to be like, you know, seen as fascinating. They're open to that, right? So I think that that's a really, really fun, interesting, like unique way of languaging that, of, you know, saying a little bit about the energy that you bring.
Right, right. Yeah, it's important. Like compassion's good, and the world oftentimes has a lack of it. And so sometimes you'll get people who they suffer, and a secondary gain is they get pleasure from compassion, from suffering. If you suffer, people will give you compassion. And maybe you're not consciously thinking of it that way, but it is a secondary gain you get from it. So I like to be careful. I think it's important to not give them certain pleasures for the suffering, to really be careful, because while people do need compassion, if you only give them compassion when they suffer, it'll just train the subconscious mind to suffer more so it can get more compassion. Just like maybe a kid gets sick so they can stay home from school, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think it is important to not punish people for suffering, but to be careful about not giving them too much pleasure over suffering.
Yeah, secondary gains. They talked to us about that in my somatic training too, in terms of like pain that people are experiencing in their bodies. You know, because one of the things that I do is I help people release their muscular tension so they can come out of physical pain that they've been in, right? Then we could jam on that, how it's related to their mental and emotional states and all of that, right? But the secondary gains piece is that sometimes people don't want to come out of their back pain. They actually don't really, like, on a subconscious level, they don't want to, because they get something out of it. They get compassion, like you said, and maybe there was a huge lack of compassion in their childhood or in their lives at one point, and they're living in a deficit of it. But ultimately what they need is they need to be able to generate that compassion internally. Receiving it from the outside will only get them so far. And so, like you said, if, you know, they are conditioning their nervous system and their body, their physical body, to hold on to pain because they're getting this reward for it, then they may not progress. Like they make their conscious mind may want them to. Their conscious mind be like, I'm ready to let go of this back pain. But unconsciously they're like, oh, but if I let go of the back pain, then I won't have people feeling sorry for me. I won't have people, you know, taking care of me. I'll have to take care of myself, and I'm not really ready to do that, right? So I think what you described is like a really careful, intelligent way to get around that mechanism, that secondary gain, and the different ways that it can show up.
Oh yeah, and even all of that's connected, even with the pain. Okay, they have back pain. They tense up, their muscles are sore, and they can't get a full breath. They can't get a full breath, and their circulation is poor, and it just spirals out and out and out. It's just a constant negative feedback loop that's cycling stronger and stronger. And so at a certain point, you have to break that loop.
Yes, that's great. I love that you brought that up about these systems of our body and how they're interconnected and interacting with each other all the time. I actually just gave a presentation on that myself about breathing and about the abdominal muscles and the way that our abdominal wall can get really tight from stress, you know, and also from jobs where we're sitting a lot and there's a compression of this area of our body, a conditioning of the muscles to stay short, and does not allow the abdominal cavity to expand for deep breathing to occur. You know, and what you just said about like our stress states, you can imagine what your stress face looks like, like what happens to our faces when we get stressed or when we get anxious. What we don't realize is that it's not just our faces, it's actually a full body reaction that we're having. And it's our whole body that's responding to our thought, our feeling, or the, you know, environment around us. And so it's really wonderful kind of talking with you, seeing how we can reprogram from these different angles, how we can change one thing and it starts shifting all these other things as well. When people are in a hypnotherapy session with you, how do you use breath to start shifting their physiology from what had been happening to something that they would like to move into?
Right. So, breath is always one thing you want to start off with, or at least I do, because breath is interesting in the fact that it is subconscious, and yet at the blink of an eye, it can become a conscious practice. It's almost that bridge between your conscious and your subconscious mind, and showing them they have control over it shows them almost a little way into the door that you have control over your mind. And not only that, but it changes everything within you. It changes your state of mind. It changes all of the way you're feeling. It changes your body and the way you're positioned. If you're breathing really fast and hyperventilating versus calmer, slower, deeper breath, it's going to change your posture. It's going to change the way your body feels. And when your body feels better, your mind feels better, and vice versa. The breath is one of the first things I start with. I have them focus on it. And earlier I mentioned ab reaction. That's when maybe they're crying, they're screaming, they're doing certain things where they're releasing this emotions. Some teachers tell you to inform them the scene fades and you tend to your breathing. If they can't really deal with the emotion they're feeling, you just reinforce the scene fades, whatever they're thinking of, and you tend to your breathing, because your breath is almost your anchor from the conscious to subconscious mind. Personally, I don't do that. I've been taught certain ways to work through ab reactions that I feel are much stronger and beneficial, but that is certainly one way. It always goes back to the breath, because that is the bridge.
Ad reactions, is that short for like adverse?
I believe so.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like that term is, you know, I understand why they're saying that they would see someone crying or screaming or this like emotional expression as being an adverse. But that, I feel like it's more neutral than that, unless we like give it a label. It doesn't have to be that way. Like certainly some people might not enjoy it, or they might be afraid of having that experience. But often sometimes when people are like in it, you know, even though they're feeling a lot, like it's not like a negative experience necessarily.
Right, right. Yeah, they often identify it almost in a negative way, and that's probably why they shortened this so it sounds a little better at reaction. But you can have complete control of it. One thing I like to do is from David Snyder, I learned it from, you identify that feeling, you give it a place in your body. Where are you feeling that feeling? And they'll point to where that feeling exists. So they've identified it in a certain spot. It's not necessarily a part of them, it's within them. You ask them to give it a shape and color. And what shape and color is this feeling? And they'll give it a shape and color, completely disassociating it from themselves. It's a shape and color within themselves. It's not just they're feeling this. This is their experience. And then you ask them to pull that out of them. Is there something they're really pulling out of them? I don't know. I can't personally say. But I know the psyche, and I know that they feel like they've separated it from themselves because they're pulling this feeling out from them. And it's in front of them. You ask them what way it's spinning, and they'll identify usually clockwise or counterclockwise. And you ask them to spin it the opposite way until they're certain it'll never come back and it'll never spin the other way again. They feel like they have control over it. They're physically moving their body, and mentally and emotionally, they're feeling like they have control over it. They're manipulating it, they're changing it, and it'll never go back, was implied. It'll never go back to the way it made them feel. And then you ask them, what shape and color is it now? Implying it's no longer that shape and color. It's no longer that pain they were feeling. What is it now? Oftentimes they'll choose a blue circle or something like that. And you ask them to slam that back in their body and notice what's different now. And because they took this feeling out of them, disassociated from it, manipulated it and changed it, and put it back, and what's different now, they can simply get over those feelings. They feel like they have control over it because you do have control over it. You're the only one with control over your state of mind, with your emotions and your well-being. And that's a simple way to get them out of these ab reactions, they call them, to get them to feel more in control, to get through these emotions, and to feel stronger and more competent about themselves.
Wow. Yes. You kind of described this process to me a little bit when we first met. I thought it was super fascinating because it's very somatic. It's very somatic in the sense that you're having them identify the feeling on a physical level. And they're, like you said, there's a dissociation of, this is not me. This is not, you know, I am not angry. I am Amy, who is experiencing anger, and my anger looks and feels like this. And it has this sensation, and it's here in this part of my body. It's not my whole body. It's not my whole being. It's not my whole reality. And giving people that little bit of like meta, where they can kind of see themselves and they can see what they're engaged with as something that they're engaged with instead of something that they're consumed by. And that's very liberating. That's very liberating because I think a lot of times, you know, especially kind of going back to the mental state that we experience as children, you know, children are kind of consumed by their experience. As you mentioned, they get really upset and they express it, or they, you know, they hit their toe and they scream and they cry. And then a few minutes later, they're gone and they're done with it. Right. But at some point as we get older, and I'm sure there's, you know, ways to explain this in terms of our nervous system, we start really holding on to and attaching ourselves and identifying with our emotions in a way that's more challenging to just move on. After the upset is over, we can get upset at someone and remain angry for days, weeks, months, years, you know, and we don't just move out of it, we hold on to it. And so we are talking about, like, in many ways a similar system in which I work in, where we're identifying where this experience, whether it's muscular tension or pain, whether it's a feeling, is being held, and how do you start to work with it to come out of it, not just try to take it out of your body and throw it away like it doesn't belong there, but how can we start to, like you said, like extract or interact with this experience and give it its due, give it some attention that it's obviously asking for, and then integrate it back into our experience. So like kind of how I do that with movement is that instead of going against a contracted muscle, like if you have a tight muscle in your neck, a lot of people will stretch it. They will pull on it. They will yank their head the other way, away from the contracting muscle. But in the work that I do, we actually do the opposite. We go with the contraction. So if the muscle is contracting in your neck and it's pulling on your neck, you go into the pattern of the contraction consciously, and then you really slowly come out of it. And we do that a couple of times. We go with the patterns that are there and then slowly come out of them to whatever degree your nervous system is capable of doing that. And that actually reprograms the muscle to be a different length. You know, so it's again, this idea of going with ourselves instead of against ourselves to acknowledge and honor the patterns and the feelings that are there instead of just, you know, trying to immediately jump away or immediately reframe or immediately, what was it you said that they do? Fade out of the scene.
Yeah, scene fades and you tend to your breathing.
Gotcha. And you think, I think that's probably was there to like protect people at one point when they had proper tools to manage this stuff, right?
Definitely. I'm sure it had its time and day and its purpose, but you learn new things and some things become outdated. If you learn better technology, tools, techniques than the old ones, you can let go of those. They're no longer serving you. And I think it's interesting how you mentioned how you go with the muscle and then you lead it a certain way, because that's almost a physical application of what I do and what hypnotists and many people do called pacing and leading. Because the pace and lead is you state something that's true. So that's the pace. It's undoubtedly true. And then you connect it to something that may not be true that you want to lead them to. So it's a pace and lead. So the fact that you're making eye contact with me in the screen means that you think what I have to say is completely accurate. You know, well, you are sitting there making eye contact with me in the screen. That's the pace. But maybe not everything I'm saying is completely accurate. In your mind, that's the lead. And people do that for positive ways, like I do in my practice. And people also do it in manipulative ways. So you can do it in a positive way. Okay, the fact that you're taking these deep breaths mean you can allow yourself to go deeper into relaxation and lead it further and further until you've convinced them that they can make the change, because they can. They just need someone to help motivate them. And then people, advertisement always uses this in ways to kind of manipulate people. They state a fact and then they lead it into something where you should buy their product. And so I thought it was interesting how that was almost a physical pace and lead. You go with the muscle and then you lead it out into where it better serves you.
Right. Yes. Into that new length. And it's a process, meaning that, you know, and this is probably true of what you described of the ad. It doesn't happen all at once. Usually, in fact, it's part of the way it works for it to not happen all at once, to happen kind of gradually, you know, like in the case of, you know, advertising something, I might state the fact and then lead into why you should buy my product, but I probably won't do that just once in the commercial. I will probably do that multiple times from a few different angles to fully convince you and get you on board with the idea that you really need this object in your life.
Right.
So it happens, you know, we go into the pattern multiple times and come out of it slowly. And each time there's a little bit more buy-in from the nervous system. There's a little bit more like, you know, going along with, oh, okay, this muscle can get a little longer. Oh, and it can get a little bit more long and a little bit more long. Oh, now look at this range of motion that we've created. Look at, now you've bought this product and it's being mailed to you for $19.95 plus shipping and handling.
Exactly. Like a refractionation. That's what I do for the Dave Elman induction, one of the fastest, most profound inductions. And one of the first things is small muscle catalepsy. Your eyelids are one of your weakest muscles per se. And so you have them relax them until they just don't work. And so you're creating a small muscle catalepsy that will progress. It'll lead into large muscle catalepsy and then the mind and everything. But with the small muscles, we do a refractionation period where we do it little by little. We have them relax until they won't work. And then we let go of that and let them work and do it again and again until it just gets even deeper. And so you do little by little until you get to where you need to be.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that totally lines up with what I know about our bodies. Our bodies actually prefer, and they work better when we do gradual shifting versus like everything's totally different all at once. Our bodies get disoriented with that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question because I just remembered this about my own experience and wondered if maybe you had like an explanation or something to say about it. When I was 19, I had this health crisis. I was like in the hospital for a period of time. And when I got out, I would do this thing. And it was like I didn't even really know what I was doing, but it was so beneficial. And there have been different times in my life that like it feels like that's just what my body like wanted to do. What I would do is I would lay down and I would close my eyes, but not quite. I would like leave my eyes just a tiny bit open. And what would start to happen is because my eyes were not fully closed, like the little muscles in my eyes were not like closed, rest, they weren't in that, position of closed, they would just start shaking. And my eyelids would be like shaking and there would just be like vibration. And I would focus on like the little bit of light that I could see in the opening of my eyes and my eyelashes. And years later, I realized like I was taking myself into a trance. And yeah, I just was wondering if you had any insight into like that response, that nervous system response, if it's something that you know about, like why would somebody do that? Why would that be a thing that somebody would find really peaceful and relaxing?
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that because before I learned hypnosis, I was really into all sorts of different things until I found out, wait, this all stems to hypnosis. This is what I've been looking for. But I would do that exact same thing. So that's funny you mentioned that. But eyelid fluttering is one of the external trance indicators. There's a few things you're looking for. We actually sit in a specific way. So I can check your breathing, so I can check your facial tone, your jaw muscles, the lip size, and also mainly the eyelid fluttering. That is one of the biggest indicators of trance, an external trance indicator. Even if you go to stage shows, you can know who's kind of playing along or who's actually in a trance by that. And it's interesting, it's almost a release of the muscles, a small muscle catalepsy where it's still kind of holding on and it's shaking. It's really hard to do consciously. I certainly can't do it. Some people can a little bit, but it's total subconscious behavior of the muscles creating a small muscle catalepsy with the eyelids because you're going into a trance. So that's really interesting you mentioned that.
I mean, to me, it was like something that I found incredibly calming and relaxing. And I would basically do that when I felt totally overwhelmed by like my environment. I would go lay down and I would just like dance with the light in my eyelashes. It was kind of like the poetic way I thought of it back then. And it would just, I felt it was really soothing. So yeah, the way I kind of imagined was that I must be putting myself into some kind of trance so that my body could heal and recover from the overload that I had experienced on a nervous system level. So, and I'm sure that there's a piece of that, like that your clients are experiencing with this reprogramming, that it's a way for their systems to be down regulating, right?
Yeah, that makes sense because all hypnosis is direct focused attention and relaxation. So you're focusing on that light, you're laying down and relaxing, and you're creating your own small muscle catalepsy, maybe not even intentionally. And so you are putting yourself in a slight trance. There's all sorts of different inductions that deal with just the eyes, like the Dr. Flowers induction is one where you simply just focus on on a part of the wall. So the doctor, his name wasn't Flowers. He actually had them focus on a thing of flowers. So it's called the Dr. Flower induction, interestingly enough. Focus on it, and you just count and blink and close your eyes and focus on that relaxation until catalepsy happens and the eyelids just won't open. That's an induction some people use solely just that. And so the eyelids are a main kind of window into trance. And once you're in trance, that it's really easy to heal because when you're just in your normal state of mind, you're focused on so many different things, almost like ADD. You have so many things going on that how are you supposed to deal with any of them? Second, you pick up one problem, there's another one right there wanting you to pick that up. So it gives you a minute to kind of click pause to clean up the room and to kind of see things from a different perspective.
Yes. How I've described it to my clients with the somatic movement is it's an undoing. Where their eyes open, we're taking in lots of information, we're organizing that information, we're turning it into, cognition and action and, doing. We're doing something, and when we close our eyes, there's a little bit less doing. when we're in a quiet environment, there's a little bit less doing, meaning that we're just taking in less information to be processed. And like you just said, we can clean up the room. We can process what's already inside that has needed some work, that has needed some reprogramming, some reprocessing. Yes.
Right. And this stuff is so important because you and I come from different backgrounds. We have different modalities of helping people to an extent. And yet as we communicate, we realize we're almost doing some similar stuff. It's a different language. And as we communicate and tell stories, we'll realize, oh, when he says this, that's what I say this, and they mean the same thing. And we just have different vocabulary, different language, but we're all in the same goal of helping people, and we're all taking a very similar route to get them there.
Yes, totally. Well, and you know, with the ethos that you've described and your approach, you know, I'm already like thinking, you know, how wonderful it would be for someone to experience both of these things together, you know, like have a body reprogramming and then go in and see you. They're already primed. They're already like ready to shift, like even on another level. Right. And then they go into the whole, they go in with the mental personal trainer and get the way that their thinking, their conscious mind processes, you know, sorted out subconsciously. So I'm already thinking about how this, you know, these approaches are doing something similar and could be extremely useful in connection with each other. So.
Oh yeah. With the same goals and almost the same route, but different three ways to get you there, then it's unstoppable pretty much, because you have different perspectives. Some people may gravitate towards different areas of each modality of each treatment. And so when you have multiple ways to get there, people can grab onto all the little parts that work for them.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. This other piece, I mean, my dad and I have been talking about like creating a retreat. Well, we're doing our first one actually this September, end of September on Mount Baldy. But we've talked about like one that would involve Watsu, which is like a water therapy. Have you heard of that before?
I've heard of it, but only from people talking about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't know what they're saying.
So I'm almost thinking like, okay, like what order would I put them in? You'd maybe they'd actually see the hypnotherapist first. Maybe they'd come to you and then they'd go do a movement session to integrate more deeply the changes they made in the hypnotherapy session. And then they'd end with the Watsu, which would like take them back into the womb, into like their first experiences. And all of it would kind of create this like huge shift in somebody's reality, you know, in a rather short period of time. You know, they probably need to just go to bed afterwards.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It sounds very impactful. Need a nap to process it all.
Yeah, totally. But also, you know, the methods that you're describing and the work that I do and even Watsu is all very gentle. You know, these are not like, you know, people may have emotional releases, but that's not the point. That's not like the end result that we're looking for. You know, the end result we're looking for is the person is more confident and more balanced and more grounded and more centered in who they are and what they really want from life, right? And how to get there.
Right. I mean, there's a, at least in my upbringing of teachings through all of this, there's a hierarchy of values. And as long as they understand these different hierarchies and how they put their values and their identity of who they are, they can truly change anything they want as long as they know the structure. And sometimes they just need some help from people like you, people like me, to show them how they can rearrange these things.
Yes. Oh, well, it's been absolutely fascinating to talk with you. You have so much really great information to share, really inspiring. I'm excited to hear more about like the different ways that you tie hypnotherapy in with other types of, you know, experiences that people are having, whether it's through storytelling, or I'm sure you are coming up with other ways to connect this work with other work. I think that that collaborative creative quality is really unique. I think people will really connect with it, really enjoy it.
Thank you. Yeah, I would like to get it all in different routes and aspects, because oftentimes hypnosis is something people just think of the comedy stage show. And so it's good to entertain people and educate them at the same time. Like I have a seminar this weekend in LA about abundance through confidence. And then I have the panel at Comic-Con, just get myself out there and help people, show them for free how they can apply this to their own lives.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Yeah, so maybe before we go, you can tell people how they could connect with you if they're interested in doing a session with you, whether you work in person or whether you work over Zoom. How would people connect with you if they wanted to learn more?
Yeah, so you can connect with me. The best way is through my website, grantmepeace.com, because it has everything there. It has frequently asked questions. It has various medical case studies and the percentage of how well these techniques work for them. It has a way to contact me. If you go on the create an appointment, contact me page, it has my social media on there, my Facebook, Grant Offenberger, my Instagram, Instagrants_hypnohealer. It has all of my information there. And there's also an upcoming experience page. So you can see where I'm going to be next. You don't just have to come to my office to see me. I'm doing these events that you don't have to pay a penny for to come see me, to speak about this, to get some help all around Southern California. And you don't even have to come to the office for an appointment. We can do Zoom. I even do house calls for certain areas, all the way up to North Hollywood, all the way down to San Diego. Specific days I have designated for house calls. So there's really no reason to not get help at this point. It's laid out in front of you to grab. And so grantmepeace.com would be the best place to find everything that I'm doing and how to contact me.
Wonderful. Oh, that's great. Yeah, make it really easy for people. I love that. And yeah, I'll have to make it out to one of your events and we'll check in again. I'd love to hear more about what you're up to.
Perfect. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Free Your Soma podcast. Subscribe now to hear more stories of somatic awakening and gain knowledge and tools for somatic living. If you'd like to learn more about me, Amy Takaya, Hannah Somatic Education, or the Radiance Program, please visit www.freeyoursoma.com.